catfishing. The Black River sleeps. On my palms, the smell of embalmed bait lingers. I rub damp clay and dream a strike. Firelight. Beach cans and bottles wait for the next big rain. A long industrial drone. Coots grumble across the water. Canneries steam back streets. The shift swings to graveyard. Diesels, horns, and sirens howl down the blood. My fire's reflection on this starless river. The harvest moon snagged deep in burning roots.
From the studios of KPFK Los Angeles Pacifica Radio, welcome to Poets Cafe. William O'Daly has translated 9 books of the late career and posthumous poetry of Chilean Nobel laureate Pablo Neruda, and most recently, Neruda's first volume, Book of Twilight, all published by Copper Canyon Press. William's books of poems include The Whale in the Web, also published by Copper Canyon, as well as The Road to Isla Negra, Waterways, a collaboration with J.S. Graustein, and Yarrow and Smoke in 2018, the latter 3 published by Folded Word Press. A National Endowment for the Arts Fellow, William was a finalist for the Quill Award in Poetry and was profiled by Mike Leonard for The Today Show. His poems, translations, essays, and reviews have been published in numerous journals and as part of multimedia exhibits and performances. A co-founder of Copper Canyon Press, he has received national and regional honors for literary editing and instructional design and was a national board member of Poets Against War. Welcome, Yael.
Thank you, Lois.
Yarrow and Smoke is a gorgeous jewel. I've read it 4 times. I love it. I want everybody to have it. It's so meditative. It's a book of journeys, physical, philosophical, spiritual. At least that's how I read it. And your introduction says it was sparked by a small bottomland fire where you and a friend were catfishing along the Tuolumne River. So what kindled this particular collection and how did it come to be?
Well, the collection, what's unusual about it is that the poems span many years, decades. Mm-hmm. And I had given a much larger manuscript to my editor, J.S. Graustein, mm-hmm. at Folded Word, and just for her interest. And she one day got a hold of me and said, hey, you know, I have selected these poems, and this would make a nice, smallish book. What do you think? And I looked at the poem, looked at what she had selected, and I couldn't believe it because I never would have put these poems together myself. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away and actually made very happy to see that she had discovered these threads that go back to some of my first couple of poems, 3 or 4 poems, mm-hmm. and all the way through a poem that was written about 3 years ago.
Right. It's a real turn for your work, at least for me and my knowledge of your work, because I'm used to bigger narrative poems, big story, and these are really condensed jewels, almost, dare I say, zen-like in their essence.
Well, thank you for that. The layout of the book was designed, it's a French mode, and
okay.
Jesse, who designed the book, wanted to give each stanza of each poem its own space.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
even the longer poem, like The Fire, you know, which goes several pages, it's one stanza per page, so that each stanza takes on, in her words, a radiance of its own.
Right.
And yet, when you read these in manuscript, and when they're reprinted, I'm sure, you know, they read like regular poems with stanza breaks and all. And sometimes there's a poem or two that the entire poem, or 3, the entire poem appears on a single page because it fit.
But it's interesting as a reader because I could see the title, for example, the next poem we're going to read, Our Names Returning After Rain. And then I know this is a title to the poem, but then I also thought, is it a title to a section? And are these kind of little vignettes that sort of go together? So obviously you can read them together as a poem, but as she said, they also stand on their own. And that's what makes it really particularly delightful when you read it.
You know, that was one of my discoveries when I saw the layout for the book, you know, when she sent me the PDF and, you know, here it is, and the TypeScript and everything. And I was, oh, this really works.
Right. Yeah.
Teach me more about myself. Teach me more about
Isn't
myself.
That's a fantastic editor.
She is. Mm-hmm. A Folded Word is a fantastic press, Folded Word Press. It's housed in New Hampshire. And it's been going now, it's probably about its 10th year,
Okay. Something
like that. And all the integrity and professionalism, as well as the friendliness and the kindness, and great editors and great ethics. And I'm honored and delighted.
What more could you want?
I don't know.
This book is... It's on the smallish side in terms of size, but it fits. I was very particular about that with my own book, just the idea that the contents mirrored the outside and the outside mirrored the contents, so that the whole package kind of communicates a special message or a special feeling, I should say, that's found within this gorgeous title, Yarrow and Smoke.
Well, I would say Night Ladder fits that prescription, actually, if I can plug your book.
Oh, you can plug it. I need to plug it more. I should read it on the air. Okay, so how about Our Names Returning After Rain?
Sure. After a night of talk beside a wavering fire, we walk the bottomland road and count the stars still sputtering. One by one, their bright names trail down the fields of tender light into a green sea of vines. Lichen graze flat stones once side-armed across the river's surface. These all bear names we raise to fruition. Rain also is of the process. Under the charred trestle, we carve our given names, our lives, the cut fingers of children late for school. We wrap each other in the pure white of absence, bloom crimson, darker. Together we begin. Wind blows through the burnt oak, but forgets from where it came, forgets what to call the rain. As we, opening our mouths to speak what we are, forget who we have been.
If you're just tuning in, this is host Lois P. Jones. We're here with poet and translator William O'Daly reading from his beautiful collection called Yarrow and Smoke, out on Folded Word Press. I was reading an interview with Stanley Plumley recently, and he articulated this aspect so well. He said, lyric poems enact their own erasure, living at the edge of disappearance. And I just thought, wow, that's what Bill's done, you know? I mean, it's like this sense of presence and also disappearance. And I was thinking about, like, you can take a line from the poem and find it meditative, multi-layered. Rain also is of the process. So the process of rain, grief, replenishment, renewal, all of these things, you know, that you can take away from it. Is this something you were aware of when you were writing? I know that's kind of a strange question, but as a poet, are you sort of limiting that, you know, place between appearance and disappearance? Is that something you enjoy?
A lot of that, which you describe extremely well, was happening inside of me. Mm. I was very aware that I was, you know, doing what I was doing what I needed to do in terms of learning and doing the practice of poetry to become a poet when I wrote that. Same with the first poem, Catfishing. So it's really about the sloughing off of oneself, and what replaces it is what it felt like. Mm-hmm. That was the sensation of it. And in order to allow a new consciousness, I had to let go of certain things, certain feelings I had about myself, mm-hmm. Certain ideas I had about who I was and what I wanted and where I was going. You know, the cut fingers of children late for school. Right. That's a little bit even tongue-in-cheek. You know, I was like, I feel like I will never get there. Mm. I will get there. Right. And I will never get there. I will get there.
Yeah, I understand that. And I just had this sense of thinking about my own poetry or other poetry I've read and how people are trying to write the poem and how you could feel its devices and it's being trying to be poetic. And yet here it does have that sense of feeling really stripped down. I mean, like Merwin-esque, in that I'm just telling you what's going on here and it's revealing something to you.
Yes, I started in my poetry as a philosophical describer, mm-hmm. you know, as one way I would term it. But very much what enabled me to do what I did in those years in the Central Valley in Modesto, where I was living right by the Tuolumne River, I would go catfishing there mm-hmm. any night I wanted, mm-hmm. was I needed to be grounded. I needed my feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to write poetry that was grounded.
Yeah.
A la Neruda, for instance, you know, that I wasn't real concerned about career. I could give a damn about the trends in mm-hmm. poetry. What I wanted to do is find out who I was, who that voice was right. that I felt inside me.
And that speaks to your later turn at Copper Canyon, which we'll get into a little bit too. This idea that, you know, not looking for the kudos or the acknowledgement necessarily or the spirit of academia, but more the essence of what is good poetry and what is communicating to others. I mean, that's a whole nother direction we'll go to with Sam. Just thinking about that desire was in you early.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now, you know, I want my poems to get out there in the world. Sure, mm-hmm. absolutely. I don't write them for myself
right.
alone, certainly. But in those days, just trying to take one step at a time, find my way, you know, I'm by the river, become the river, you know. And that isolation, in a way, actually is what it was. Pattern of isolation and immersion mm-hmm. That Alan Watts talks about,
yes.
for instance. You know.
We hear him a lot in KPFK. Yes. How about if we go from the river to the fire?
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
These are two stanzas from The Fire, which is a poem that came out of a lot of the backpacking I did in the Southern Sierra. Farther on, stopping to cool our blistered feet in the water, we both for no reason recalled how in fifth grade, when the whole class had been bad, the teacher explained that in the unlikely event of an official accident at an inland reactor, or because we live in a state of strategic importance, our hormones could be separated from matter. Our bones, like skeletons of horses or of history, torn from our souls and released as vapor. The excesses of light recede, and shadows grow across the creek. In your hand, the knife joins dried fish and bread, bread and wild onion. We are born again when a seed splits inside us. In the conch where blood sounds its salty praise for what we make possible tonight.
Beautiful and stunning. Our bones like skeletons of horses or of history, torn from our souls and released as vapor. Wow. I don't know when you wrote this. I don't know the chronology. So it's an interesting way to kind of try and get a grasp of the timeline on this. But I know you have an extremely demanding schedule. How do you get into this meditative state? You know, how do you go into nature? Is it more that you can kind of glean some moments for yourself in early morning, or what do you do as a process?
Well, I've done this for so long now that all I have time to do is get home from work. It's a bit of a commute. My day job involves water. I'm very much in the environmental field. And so there's some little bit of help there, even though it's a technical field, and the reports that I work on with authors and such are technical, generally. But when I get home, that ride home, I'm thinking about what I'm going to be doing. I get home, take a little time, go into my study, and essentially begin working.
Wow.
Although what that means is, you know, sitting back and looking at what I've been doing and trying to find that foothold that will, you know, where I can restart for the evening. Sometimes I'll go and do a bunch of exercise. I'll go to the gym. And that's been really helpful, especially with the book Waterways, where I had a deadline, writing poems to deadline, which I found out I'm actually pretty good at. I'm a project guy, you know. I know about deadlines, and they help me sometimes,
right?
Even in poetry. So I would just really exhaust myself at the gym, come home, take a shower, go into my study, and boy, the receptivity. I mean, just I don't have that little editor's voice in my head. I don't know about that third word, that fourth word you just wrote. I don't know, where's it going? You know,
wow.
Maybe I should choose another word. You know, that editor,
yes.
That little cricket that sits on our shoulder. That was gone. That's just gone, and I'm just ready to receive. That whole process, though, required that toward the second half, and I kind of earned it given that process, which is another story. But it was just all my inhibitions and my concerns and worries were gone, and I was just like listening, you know, just listening.
Yeah.
And the poems and pieces of poems and lines and words would come.
Well, it's very clear that you've been in that some meditative state in this book. I have a shoe out, and I'm always trying to kill the cricket.
I don't blame you for that. Dang cricket.
It's like, oh, God, that noisy thing. Drive
you
crazy.
I hear you.
I really want to get Heron Dances Over the World in before we take a turn. How about we hear that one?
All right.
Now, this is one of the most recent poems you've written, right?
Yes. This is, relative to this book, very recent. Heron Dances Over the World. Even you're not watching as you spread your black tattered wings and step among the colors of the physical world. Spindly legs conjure the symbol for infinity in red earth, in fresh blue snow and white mist. Endangered islands bloom, the wetland fills with mountain shadow. In a parallel universe, your reflection moves to its inner calling, to folded granite, music of the waterfall. You live as hidden origami, with creases and abandon, intricate patterns that resist the receding shore. You circle like an equation neither eyes nor lips can touch, motion that can't be solved or written on the tongue. You do not stop to preen among the battered dunes. Your cry rings iron from irony, recalls the silent bells, laments the love I've forgotten. You breathe closer to the swaying aspen than to the orphan moon and the tide's pull. In this dance you create like a beetle your own being. You become possibility.
Gorgeous. If you just tuned in, I'm host Lois P. Jones, and you're listening to our guest, William O. Daly, read from his newest collection, Yarrow and Smoke, out on Folded Word Press. There's a lot I could say about that because it's an ekphrastic poem, and I do love them, and you have made this leap to immediacy, which is, you know, it's not descriptive, obviously. It was a jumping-off point for you.
Yes. It actually was interesting in that it was a project. The Sacramento Poetry Center had several poets go into the Sacramento Fine Arts Center, choose two paintings to write to.
Right.
And the one that I chose, the heron, you know, it sang to me. And this poem also kind of just wrote itself or felt that way. But then I didn't finish it until I went to perform it with the Dave Brubeck Jazz Quintet. And the working with those young folks helped focus the music.
Nice.
Yeah.
You do a lot of collaborative work. I mean, here's the poet collaborating with the art, and then you have the jazz performances that you do, and even the photographs with Galen Garwood, incredible, mysterious photographs, which were in some of your earlier work as well.
Yes. His paintings adorn the covers of a number of the Neruda editions. And Yarrow and Smoke, this is a Garwood on the cover.
Okay.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
And The Road to Isla Negra, his photographs are on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
And one photograph accompanies each poem. And then I've gotten back with Louis Valentine Johnson, an innovative guitarist in the classical tradition. And he's the one I've been working with most recently. And that's always a beautiful experience.
Now, Galen is also a friend of yours.
Yes, he is.
And you've recently lost a compadre.
I did.
You co-founded Copper Canyon with the late, great Sam Hamill. How did you meet Sam?
I was enrolled in a creative writing workshop at UC Santa Barbara. And it was the very end of my freshman year, 18 years old. And the British poet Frederick Turner was teaching the course, and he goes, you know, there's just too many students here. This is just too big and unwieldy. Can anyone wait to take this course until next year? And it was my first year. I raised my hand, but I noticed this gentleman sitting a few rows away, and he wasn't like anyone else in the class. He was about 9 years older, I found out. And he looked as though he had had 30 years more experience than the rest of us in poetry in particular, which turned out to be true. So I came back in the fall, signed up for the writing workshop with Fred, and there was Sam again. It was one level above. And then I was in the school, the campus commons, in the cafeteria, and this young woman comes up to me and says, my boyfriend Sam would like me to invite you to come sit with us to have coffee. And I thought, oh. And I look over and, oh, it's this guy from the writing workshop. So I said, sure. And I went over and we started talking, and it was a little halting at first, and I could sense our experiences were a world apart. But right away, there was some spirit there, some commonality that we both recognized, him in particular, more than myself. And so that's how we first began to get acquainted. Had me over for dinner, and he'd be cooking dinner, and he'd say, what do you think about feminism? And I'd say, I'm for it. And he'd say, oh, okay. And he goes, what are you reading? You know, what's your experience? And I said, well, I just finished Simone de Beauvoir's The Second Sex, and I found it was a pretty amazing book, and we talked a little bit about it. And we just had these conversations, and it morphed into road trips and late night recitations of poems to each other, usually at his place, and then taking another workshop. The class was asked, who would like to help edit Spectrum magazine for UC Santa Barbara? And we want to revive its reputation. It was once venerable. It's kind of sunken into being a student publication. No one's really interested once it's actually published. So it's not getting out there. who would like to do this? Maybe 12, 15 people signed up. When the work hit, Sam and I were left. He was the editor. I was the assistant editor. I kept the books for the first few months as I read I was voracious about poetry in those mm-hmm. days. Read everything I'd get my hands on. When I finally felt I could venture an opinion, then I truly came into my role as assistant editor. We took the money for three issues, combined those funds into money for a single issue, blockbuster issue, mm-hmm. and it was, and published that at the end of that year. And 1972 came out. And then the next fall, we're walking across campus, and this journalist comes up to us and says, "Congratulations." And we said, "Huh?" And he goes, "Didn't you hear? You won the Best College Magazine in the Nation Award, Editor's Award."
Wow.
And we had not heard. Sam went over to the English department, and the English department had contacted the CCLM asking them to reissue the check to the English department, where it was issued to Sam. They said, "No, it's an editor's award."
Mm.
And it's for Sam. So we took that $500. One of the other co-founders, Jim Gottney's mother, had sent him $500 because her mattress factory in L.A. was doing so well. And I sold a 47 Ford panel truck for $250 to a friend I still have.
Uh-huh.
And that was the seed money, which went very quickly for Copper Canyon.
This is such a great, great story, and there's so much time we can devote to the history of Copper Canyon and your meeting, but I'd love to go out with one poem of Sam's that you could share with us.
I'd like to share one of my favorite.
Great.
It's called "What the Water Knows." What the mouth sings, the soul must learn to forgive. A rat's as moral as a monk in the eyes of the real world. Still, the heart is a river pouring from itself, a river that cannot be crossed. It opens on a bay and turns back upon itself as the tide comes in. It carries the cry of the loon and the salts of the unutterably human. A distant eagle enters the mouth of a river. Salmon no longer run, and his wide wings glide upstream until he disappears into the nothing from which he came. Only the thought remains. Lacking the eagle's cunning or the wisdom of the sparrow, where shall I turn, drowning in sorrow? Who will know what the trees know? The spidery patience of young maple, or what the willows confess. Let me be water. The heart pours out in waves. Listen to what the water says. Wind, be a friend. There is nothing I couldn't forgive.
Thank you, Bill. And thank you, Sam. This is host Lois P. Jones, and our guest has been William O'Daly. Thanks to our producer, Marlena Bond. Look for us on the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.